Welcome to Diving Into Writing with me, Lucinda Pebre, and Marielle Smith. Join us as we dive beyond the surface of our writing practice. Hi, Marielle.
Hi, Lou.
We're back.
We are back, and people might not have noticed this, but we just had a four-week break.
Yes. So it feels a bit weird being back.
Yes, I think we need to get back in it. Because we always record so far ahead, there's not going to be a break for anyone else, not for the listeners. We did a bit of a holiday break, a summer break.
And you went back to the Netherlands.
I did. I actually got on a plane.
Wow. You're braver than me.
It was very scary, actually. But it all went, it went fine. Not like I expected, but I made it through.
I've found that I'm shopping in the posh supermarkets because more people wear masks in the posh supermarkets.
I was one of the few people, because masks, you don't have to wear masks anymore in the Netherlands either. And so I arrived Sunday to Monday night. So next day, my mom was like, let's do some shopping. Because I have a radically different diet than my mother. She eats everything and I'm a vegan. So she's like, let's do some shopping. So we drove to the supermarket, got out of the car, and I was like, did COVID happen here?
I know.
And it was just, and I had just spent like 5 hours on a plane with my mask on. And then before that, 2 hours on the airport with my mask on. In Cyprus, you still need to wear your mask outside of the house, even though it's 35-ish degrees. And not everybody does it, but that's not the point.
Yeah.
You can't decline for it. And then you're there and there's just like, and my mom is like, no, look, there's a person wearing a mask. So I actually went inside the supermarket without my mask.
Yeah.
And it just freaked me out. So I put it on.
It's really hard though, because it becomes a norm not to wear them. As soon as there's more people not wearing them than people wearing them, then it becomes the norm, and you've kind of got to be quite a confident person to go, no, my choice is to wear a mask to protect others or what, for whatever reason.
It was, and it did give me, like, some people did look at you.
Yeah.
But only one person, I had an emergency dentist appointment, but of course, naturally, my own dentist was on holiday, so I went to another practice. And this lady, so the lady behind the desk, she was like, oh, you don't have to wear a mask inside our practice, but if you're personally more comfortable this way, it's okay. She's extremely peppy, which automatically rubs me the wrong way anyway. So I was like, yeah, I just want to wear it. But of course, the weirdest thing is that as soon as I was done, because you take off your mask when you're at the dentist.
Yes, you do.
Not the dentist, not the assistant, but you do. So of course, I felt super weird and very self-conscious because I walked out without the mask on. And then I was I had to pay with Miss Peppy. And I was just like, oh no, like now I feel super weird because I came in with my mask.
Yes. Right, being and now pink. You're cured.
and now I'm not wearing it. So that was the one moment that I fell. Oh, and I have, I went to buy a new phone and that just took ages. And they don't do AC necessarily in the Netherlands because it's not necessary. No. So here, like wearing it outside is like brutal. So I try not to do, I don't really do it unless I actually am in a bit in an area where there's lots of people. But of course, inside anything, you wear it, right? Like you cannot even go shopping for groceries anymore without showing a COVID certificate. Correct. So that you're tested or that you have the vaccine. My girlfriend, she didn't get vaccinated. So she needs to get tested before she can go shopping for groceries, which I kind of think is impeding on human rights. But that's another discussion. But so here we have AC, right? So you can just, it's not that hard to wear a mask inside when the AC is on. So when I was buying my phone, it was hot in there and it just took forever. And of course, my mother is walking around without a mask. Nobody's wearing a mask. I'm the only one wearing a mask. And that kind of, I almost had a panic attack in that shop.
It's really hard. When I worked in the hospital, we weren't allowed AC. There's no windows that open, you know, during the first lockdown. So on the intensive care, the windows don't open. And there's normally AC on, which is so that the temperature's regulated. But it was coming up to the summer and the temperatures were starting to rise and we weren't allowed it because they said that it would, you know, blow any sort of, well, bacteria or virus across the intensive care unit. So you would get the flow to all the patients. And that was really hard, you know, to wear masks like 12 hours plus and in really stifling sort of heat.
But they completely came back from that, right?
They changed it.
Now, if you don't have proper ventilation or AC, you're not allowed to use a room because of COVID.
Yeah, I think the problem is kind of our general intensive care had AC that was set up to kind of barrier nurse so that it didn't flow across everyone. But this was an older unit. So it had AC in it, but it wasn't set up to protect or to stop the transmission of. Yeah. So I don't know what they did in the end. They did something to it so that the air didn't flow in the same, you know, it didn't infect everyone if one patient had COVID.
We learned a lot.
Yes, we did. We did. We're still learning, I think.
Yeah. So shall I not so subtly move us to the topic?
Yes, because by the time this goes out, COVID may well be all behind us, or we could be in another lockdown. Who knows?
I'm just going to be, the first one is a bit of wishful thinking. but, you know, fingers crossed, you never know. This is episode 69, and we had episodes on a bunch of episodes on goal setting and the different things that come up around that. And we want to move to our next topic, which is going to be dedicated to writing.
Yeah, so that's... it's how not just how you start writing, but how you continue and how you keep producing more and more stuff.
Yeah. So it's the goals. Yeah. The goal setting for me is more the start, because that's now you know what you want and now you know what's realistic. But how do you actually dedicate yourself to the writing life? To the book you're writing. So how do you keep going, indeed?
In Barielle, in an organised way, goal setting would come first. If you're me, that's not how it happened.
Well, to be fair, I think a lot of people start writing just in between things. And it's only later than they realize they want to be serious about that. And maybe then they first start to seriously write, because that's what happened to me. I never had any goals. I was just working on this particular book.
Yeah.
And only later, because I think being dedicated to writing, I think it has to do with the author mindset, and it's a particular mindset shift.
Yeah.
That's what I think. Going from I'm just doing, for me, it was very much, I am curious about what it was like for you. For me, it was very much going from this hobby that I have that nobody really knows about or needs to know about, to I actually want to be an author.
Yeah. Well, for me, it was, it's a bit strange, really. I think I kind of had some positive feedback when I was very young, probably about 7 years old, in a piece of writing that I did at school. And that set me off with the idea that one day I would be a writer. But I never did anything about it. I read all the time as a kid, though. So that's always a good grounding, isn't it? Not just as a kid. But,
no, yeah. But I mean, that's like the best education for a writer, right?
Yeah, that's where it started. And I very much started on, believe it or not, horror. even quite young, yes. I don't know whether that was because that's what was available or that's what I thought I liked. Well, it is what I like, one of the things that I like. I don't know why, but read lots of different things. And then obviously as you get older, other things took over, you know. So I did my nurse training, and going out became more important, and listening to music and going to see bands and that sort of thing. So that I was still reading, but not, it was, the writing was always something that I thought would happen at some stage, and it did.
Yeah. So what stage was that? Like, at what age did you turn back to writing?
It was in when I started, not seriously, but when I started writing a book, was in 2014. And it was to do with a dog that I got. So before that, I'd been competing at agility with my dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a dog that couldn't cope with the sort of environment. So that meant that I did lots of things with him, but it meant that I couldn't put him in that situation. So I had time on my hands. So I started writing at that stage because it was, I don't know whether it was an outlet or just the opportunity or the fact that I had this bit of time that I hadn't had before. But I thought I'll write a book. So that's what I did.
Well, that's, I mean, sometimes that's just it, right? Like
yeah.
a shift in your schedule or whatever, and suddenly you're like, what am I gonna do now? And then it's like your muse is like, well, remember.
Yeah. That's it. And writing a book's easy, isn't it? You've seen enough films, you've read enough books, so you just sit down and write a book. Or so I thought at the time.
Did you just say writing is easy?
That's what I thought at the time. In 2014, I wrote, I did just sit down and write 70,000 words. I'd just each day write so many thousand words. And then at the end, I'd got a book that was really shit. And I didn't know why.
Well, you learned a thing or two in the meantime, didn't you?
Yes, yeah. I enjoyed it as well. That was the other thing. That was kind of reinforcing.
Yeah, because this is the thing. Like, I see too many writers these days who think because other indie writers can make it big, I can make it big too. I'm not necessarily love being a writer.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it's better than the job I have now, so let's try this thing.
Yeah, and it changes because there was no pressure on me at that time. You know, no one was, like you say, I didn't show it anyone. No one was reading it. It wasn't getting it wasn't going to be great. But I did enjoy the process and it was kind of fun. And then at the end of it, I never thought it was good. I never showed it anyone. Nobody has read it even now, and nor will they.
I was just going to say, you need to send me this gem.
I might have a look back at it, actually, because sometimes it's nice to look back on your early stuff and realise how far you've come.
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, then I discovered that you actually need structure. Oh, it's a good idea to have structure in a novel.
Because you knew, because you've read so much, so you know that. So that's probably why you realized that your book was shit.
Yes, probably.
That doesn't necessarily mean that you understand why your book is shit, but you know something's missing or something's not right.
Yeah. And to be honest, I never had plans to publish it or to even show it anyone. So it was only when I finished it, I joined a writing group, which was quite brave. Because you're kind of, there was an expectation that you would show or share your work. You weren't forced to, but there was an expectation that you would. So I didn't show any of that. I wrote other stuff and that was shit as well. But it was a milestone sharing it, obviously.
Well, you can't really improve if you're like nobody. Nobody started writing perfect prose.
No, I don't think so.
No, I don't believe that.
I think it's stepping outside of your comfort zone in order to grow, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's what I did. And we had to critique other people's writing. And we were really lucky. That's where I met Anna. We had a brilliant tutor. So that helped. She taught creative writing at the university and she was really good and really kind and motivating.
So is that for you, when you look back now, is that when you decided to dedicate yourself to writing?
I think it's a combination of the enjoyment that I got out of writing a novel and finishing a novel, even though no one was going to see it, and applying myself to learning the craft, you know, and knowing that you're improving each week or whatever. I kind of got a kick out of that, but I didn't at that stage. I dedicated myself to writing in terms of I knew that I would carry on writing for the rest of my life, but I didn't dedicate myself to writing as in committing to publishing anything.
So you dedicated yourself to the writing practice but not necessarily to the writing career.
That's right, yeah, yeah. I think the change, I'm not sure that there was a precise moment, but starting to listen to Joanna Penn and, you know, the 20 to 50 books ethos, I realised that actually I don't just want this to be a hobby, and those are your choices, aren't they, really? You can write as a hobby or you can write and get it out there so that people read it. But actually, in order for people to read it, you've also got to take it a little bit further, haven't you? Otherwise, you can publish it, but no one's necessarily going to pick it up or pay for it.
Or leave any good reviews.
Yes, or any of that. So that's when I decided. So what about you?
Well, I'm one of those people, I've always written as long as I can remember. But it was for a long time, there was like a closeted hobby. Like, people didn't really know I was doing that. I think I was embarrassed about it as well. Just afraid it was not going to be good enough or something. So it was really just for me. And then I, at one point when I was 28, I was talking to a friend, and we kind of simultaneously admitted to each other very nervously that we were trying to write a novel. And then we decided, we realized that we were both pretty much, because I had been spending the past 5 years or so rewriting and revising the first 7 chapters of one particular novel. Like, I was not getting beyond a certain point in that novel, right?
Yeah.
So we basically decided, let's swap and see what's there. And I really liked what she was doing. She really liked what I was doing. So we became each other's cheerleaders, and we met every few weeks we met. And we had to send each other new stuff so we could critique it. So that's when, so I could spend like literally 5 years on the same 7 chapters, but then within the next 6 months, maybe I actually got to the end. The moment somebody read it, that was like my external motivator. So that's when I dedicated myself to the project. Like, I at least need to write the end. I'll see what I'm going to do with it afterwards.
That seems to be a key thing for both of us, was sharing the work.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Just having, for me, it was very much somebody outside of myself. Because, so you, when you were young, you had somebody say something positive about your writing.
Yeah.
You had in your head, this is something I might be doing later on in my life, right? Yeah. But I was brought up with, you don't want to be a writer because that doesn't pay any bills.
Yeah.
Right? So because every writer is a starving artist.
I have to say that I never thought I'd write as a living. Well, I don't really yet, but I never thought I'd write as a living back then. I just knew I'd write.
Yeah, so for me, like when I grew up, I really wanted to be a writer, like as a profession, as a profession. That's what I wanted to do, and that was countered by the grown-ups around me with, but nobody ever said it wasn't a real job. They just said it was a hard job and it didn't pay for anything, for much. So if you go down that path, you're basically resigning yourself to a life of poverty, etc.
I think there are easier ways of making a living, I'll be honest.
Yeah, that is very true. But I think that's, so when it took me so long, and it took me until somebody said, you need to keep working on this because I want to know how it ends.
Mm.
That's kind of what started me in that direction.
Yeah.
And at the time, like what year are we in? Yeah. So at the time, like I was already, I don't think I started my editing company yet, but I was already editing and translating for like my academic colleagues. So I was doing a lot of academic writing, and I was also working a lot with other people's academic writing.
Mm.
I really kind of killed, except for like a creative writing course at some point at uni. I really kind of kept telling myself that I'm an academic, right? I'm not a creative writer.
So when did you decide that you wanted to write as a business, to take it that seriously?
That actually, you mentioned Joanna Penn, and that is, I met someone online through another business. She made vegan soaps and lip balms and stuff like that. And then at one point, I followed her on Facebook. And then at one point, she said she was shutting down the business because she was going to focus on her writing career. And I, of course, didn't know that she was writing. So we became friends. We're still friends. And she's actually the person who introduced me to the Smarter Artist, so Sterling and Stone, their podcast, Joanna Penn. And that really excited me. So I think that's because I didn't know what indie publishing was. So yeah. This friend introduced me to self-publishing.
Yeah.
And I think that for me was the game changer.
Yeah.
So I think that's when I became dedicated to my writing practice, to not necessarily because I for the longest time, I didn't think I could make a living just of writing. So it was as something else I was doing. So I always thought I would be doing part-time something and part-time writing. Which I am doing. So, I think that was the moment for me. So it was like you said, like I first, like same with you, maybe first you dedicated yourself to the writing. And then later on, when you come across certain podcasts or whatever, that's when you have the other, the second mindset shift, like, oh, wait a minute. I could maybe do something like this.
Yeah, you find out what the possibilities are. I think it was the seriously thinking about where is this going and what do I want from it? What do I want? Just like kind of a stress relief. Do I want anyone to read it? And by that time, I had developed some skills and I could write a story. Do you know? So I knew how far I'd come, and I wanted people to read it.
Yeah, and I think that's the shift as well, right? Like the moment you decide, I want other people to read it.
Yeah.
I think that's a very important moment in any writer's life. Like I've had coaching clients who had never had anyone else read their work. And still, like when we were done, for example, somebody who once did my 3-month writing program. Throughout the 3 months, I tried. You know, I kept going back to, so have you found anyone yet that you trust?
Mm-hmm.
By the end, she still was not
ready
to share her work. But I do think it was one of the scariest things I've ever done, like sharing seven chapters that I've been working on for 5 years. What if my friend had said, this is shit?
Well, that is the danger, and I only realized this later on, of, you know, if I'd have gone to a writing group where the tutor had been harsh or the criticism had been harsh, I don't know how that would have affected me. I don't know whether I would have continued. So there is a danger in that when you're joining a group or showing it to someone that you pick the right person.
Yeah, somebody who can give you the constructive feedback.
There's a real skill, and that was part of what we learned, was to give constructive feedback. And that way you always see something positive in what you're reading. It's not all negative.
No, and I think that's how you grow, right?
Yeah.
At least this is what I always told my students. Like we call that sandwich feedback, right? You start with something positive.
Yeah.
Then you bring out the negative, and then you say, but if you make these improvements, so you always end on something positive again. The last bit, like having to think through something and what you would change. I think that helps you grow a lot as a writer as well, because then you actually have to actively think, not just something's wrong here, but what is wrong and how would I improve that?
We did have a woman that came to the group, and I think she was a bus driver, coincidentally. her writing was good. It really drew you in, but she could not stand criticism. So even like any sort of criticism of or any suggestions that she could make it better, and she proper stomped off. And the thing is, she just brought it for praise, I think. But she was never going to finish a book.
Oh, but that's a mind, like that's something like when you actually share your work with somebody, I think it's really important to know from what intention you're sharing that with somebody else.
Yeah.
Like if you're sharing it because you want to hear that this is like the best piece of writing somebody has ever read. Yeah, that's yeah. I wish. But if you send it to hear whether this is something you should continue working on, whether there's something there.
Yeah.
Right. Like I had a client beginning of the year, and she had finished this whole manuscript, but that was basically her question to me was like, but is there something there? Am I just fooling myself? So, of course, when I read it, there was a lot of things that needed to be done. But it was very easy for me to point out what was there, because there was definitely a story there.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You can always find, you know, how or where someone will develop, can't you? Even if it's not, even if there are a lot of problems with it.
Yeah. So that's the thing. It's like, but even, you know, coming back to your bus driver, like even like there is no perfection in writing, right?
No, no.
There's just when do we stop editing? And that it always makes me think of J.K. Rowling. She once said about book 5 in the Harry Potter series. That, you know, by that time, of course, they knew she was going to make millions because of that book, right, by that time.
Yeah.
So she had set herself, like the editors had become a little, I don't know if she used the word, like they cut her slack that she shouldn't have been cut.
Yeah.
So she's like, in hindsight, like at the time when I was writing it, I was glad that, you know, they told me it's fine. But now, and it's not, as it now it's out, when I read it again, I'm like, oof, that could have been tightened up more.
Yeah. Well, Amy uses beta readers a lot. And we were, you know, when you're trying to get something past them, something a little bit lazy maybe. And they always, always, always pick up on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that is like, I have this... this one client of mine, like it's I can be quite like I bring it very nicely, right? But I do a lot of outline critiques for her, and it's always funny because then I'm looking at it and I'm like, this doesn't really work, how am I gonna say that? But then, you know, later on we have a call about it and she always says, you know, like, damn it, like this is like the moment for her that she was like, yeah, maybe I'll get away with that. So I always find the points where she's very unsure herself whether it's gonna work or not, and she just goes like, fingers crossed, and let's hope she doesn't notice. And then I'm always thinking, this is how I'm gonna say that this is not gonna work.
I think it's human nature, isn't it, to try and get something in there that, you know, isn't quite right.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's the hard work. Same with J.K. Rowling. Like, she probably knew it needed another edit when they told her it was fine. But yeah. I can see if you're just like, at one point, you just want to get it over and done with.
Well, you're exhausted by that stage, aren't you?
So I completely get that. But trying to get back to topic.
Yeah.
Because it is actually very on topic. Because if you're in like drafts something, it kind of does get a little hard to stay dedicated.
Yeah. But we are going to do a few episodes looking,
yes,
diving into more depth, yes, about the dedication.
Yes. So I have a list here of things that we are most probably going to talk about, knowing us, like it might shift a little bit, but we, just being honest about us.
Yeah.
So I do have a list here. Do you want me to share some of that?
Yes, I think you should.
Okay, so we have a few topics that we want to talk about is like the level of dedication you want to reach in your writing. So how dedicated do you want to be? That's something we want to talk about. And also we want to talk, because the podcast is very much about self-awareness. So we also want to dedicate an episode to the question of how dedicated we really are when it comes to our writing work. So that's going to be some self-reflection in there. We also want to talk about the things you might want to give up in order to become more dedicated, to dedicate more time. We'll definitely be talking about boundaries, because I think for a lot of people, they might want to be dedicated, but it's very difficult, especially if you're doing writing as a hobby or you're not paying the bills with it yet. It can be really hard to set boundaries around it. And another topic I have here is structuring your time.
Yeah.
So those are some of the topics we will be diving into over the next couple of weeks episodes.
Do you want me to leave people with the questions?
Did you write them down?
I did. Otherwise, I'd never remember them.
Okay, yes, because we have two questions as we want to leave you with two questions at the end of this episode. Take it away, Lou.
So what does being dedicated to writing mean to you? And the other question is, when did you decide to dedicate yourself to writing? I couldn't read my own writing then.
And the funny thing is, the way I wrote dedicate in my own list of questions, I'm also looking at it. What does it say there? dedicate. I actually wrote decreate instead. Okay. That's just my teacher handwriting, I'm afraid. Okay. So yeah, those are the two questions.
And we'll be back next week to talk about how dedicated are you?
Yes, but we will be back next week, but we will be back with a listener in 2 weeks, Lou.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good one.
Yes.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter, or visit our website at divingintowriting.com. We'd love to hear from you, and if you'd like to leave us a review, we'd be ever so grateful. Bye for now.